Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
This is the Savage Nation, but no, this is not Michael Savage. This is Joseph Fair, a friend of the Savage Nation, sitting in. Dr. Savage is under the weather today. Too sick to think was the way he explained it in one email to me earlier in the day. You know, that's pretty sick, because Michael Savage at 50% is better than most of us. I know you join me in wishing Michael a speedy recovery. But you know what that means? It means it's up to you and me to carry on the important work of the Savage Nation today. It's a big responsibility. So help me shoulder it tonight by calling in at 1-800-449-8255. Meanwhile, the news goes on. It waits for no man, not even Dr. Savage. So what are we going to be talking about? Well, what else? Barack Obama's speech today, responding to the raging wildfire of outrage across this country over the anti-American and racist remarks of his pastor, Jeremiah Wright. What do you think? Did he address your concerns? Did he answer your questions? Did he assuage your fears? Do you buy what Barack Obama said today? Do you believe, unlike his pastor of 20 years, that Barack Obama really loves America and believes in the decency and generosity of the American people, that he seeks unity and racial reconciliation? Are his statements of condemnation enough? Were they specific enough for you? Or is it time to just move on, as the old expression goes? Or do you suspect, as I do, that Obama's actions for the last 20 years, the tithes and offerings he has made to his church, the loyalty he has shown to Wright, the fact that he placed him in positions of prominence on his campaign, that he and his wife were married by Wright, that Wright baptized their children, that he cited Wright repeatedly as a spiritual and political counselor and mentor, that his book's title came from Wright? Do you think all of that, all of those actions and more, betray Obama's speech today, denouncing some of what Wright said? That's my question for you today. Does anyone feel like me that this is just oh so convenient, that Reverend Wright is an albatross around Barack Obama's neck right now, so he's going to do and say whatever he has to do and say to push him aside? Can we afford to just let Jeremiah Wright be a forgotten issue in this campaign? How important do you think Jeremiah Wright is to Barack Obama? Call the show and let the Savage Nation know at 1-800-449-8255. Let's listen to some of the highlights from Barack Obama's speech today, speech in Philadelphia, that is being billed as the most important he has ever delivered. Here's what he has to say about Jeremiah Wright.
I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community. I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me, a woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street, and who on more than one occasion has uttered racial or ethnic stereotypes that made me cringe. These people are part of me. And they are part of America, this country that I love.
Do you buy it? And does it bother you? Like, it bothers me that Obama is actually denigrating, even indicting his own white grandma as a racist, as a way of excusing or rationalizing the very well-considered statements of his pastor that we just heard here. John in Norfolk, Virginia, what do you have to say?
Well, there are a couple points here. One, I think it's the old moral equivalency game that he's doing where he's putting the statements on the same plane, just like he did in terms of raising the question whether our pastors have ever said anything we've disagreed with. Yeah, they have, and I've left the church. At no point in any of his discussion.
Did we lose John? How important do you think Jeremiah Wright is to Barack Obama? If he's being truthful with us today, why was he sitting in those pews for the last 20 years? Does it make sense to you? Let's go to Elijah in Sacramento.
Hey, I just want to say is, why did Barack Obama had a comment on this, and why did he have to explain why his pastor is preaching about this instead of, you know, explaining all these things and all these situations? Why doesn't he have the pastor come on and explain it? Why does Barack Obama have to explain this, I mean, to the public? I mean, this is ridiculous. I mean, and another thing is, he says he's been listening to this guy for 20 years, and do we really want someone to run for president and become president that's been listening to this kind of hate speech for, you know, almost 20 years?
Thank you, Elijah. You know, the last thing Barack Obama wants right now is for Jeremiah Wright to be given press conferences and explaining himself. Very clear from Barack Obama's speech today is the one thing he wants to do is he needs to put this issue aside. And the question before us today is, is this speech enough to do it? Will the media, the big media, cooperate with him? Have we heard the last from Jeremiah Wright? Let's listen to some more of Obama's speech. Let's go to clip 17.
The fact is that the comments that have been made and the issues that have surfaced over the last few weeks reflect the complexities of race in this country that we've never really worked through. A part of our union that we have not yet made perfect. And if we walk away now, if we simply retreat into our respective corners, we will never be able to come together and solve challenges like health care or education or the need to find good jobs for every American.
Chris in New Jersey, welcome to the Savage Nation. Your thoughts on the Barack Obama speech today?
The most outrageous thing is that he would compare the certain few ignorant statements of his white grandmother who sacrificed for him to the carefully considered supposed theologian, Jeremiah Wright. I think it's absolutely outrageous, and it shows a horrible lack of judgment that he would sit there for 20 years and listen to what was said. These are the types of statements that you hear at a mosque, not at a Christian church. And I think it's outrageous, and I think it's finally getting the attention that it deserves. It's long overdue.
Very insightful statement, Chris. That is what bothered me most about that first clip that we heard. I mean, what he's doing is he's equating what his white grandma said in a casual moment, his loving white grandmother, to what Jeremiah Wright has said repeatedly over the last 20 years. We're going to hear some of those clips from Jeremiah Wright later on in the show. But let's listen again to clip number 15 and listen to the way Obama very cleverly, maybe, indicts his own white grandmother.
I can no more disown him than I can disown the black community. I can no more disown him than I can disown my white grandmother, a woman who helped raise me, a woman who sacrificed again and again for me, a woman who loves me as much as she loves anything in this world, but a woman who once confessed her fear of black men who passed her by on the street, and who on more than one occasion has uttered racial or ethnic stereotypes that made me cringe. These people are part of me. and they are part of America, this country that I love.
Bill from Wheeling, West Virginia, welcome to the Savage Nation. Your thoughts about that speech today?
Well, I tell you, I always thought he was a weasel. Now he proved himself. And ironically, he made the speech in the home of the weasel politics, Philadelphia, PA. I think he's finished. I hope he's finished.
You think he's toast?
He's done.
Thank you, Bill. Let's go quickly to Barrington in Sacramento, California. Your thoughts?
Yes. I just want to say, why is it so difficult for a black person to talk about the things that has happened to us in the past? I think that we should be able to talk about it. And it doesn't, because we talk about it doesn't mean that we hate our white brothers and sisters. It doesn't mean that at all. It just means that we have to talk about the things that happened in the past so it don't happen again. Look at my Jewish brothers and sisters. Up till today, we're hunting down people that have worked with Hitler to try that caused harm to my brothers and sisters, Jewish brothers and sisters. And if we catch them today, we still jail them and prosecute them. So I think in order for us to move on, it doesn't mean we're blaming our peers, like the white people now that we grow up with. We can't, like, blame them for it.
Is that what you think Reverend Wright was doing? Is you just reminding us about some of the horrors of American history? Is that really what you think, Barrington? When we get back from the next break, I want to play some of these statements by Reverend Wright, and we'll let the audience decide if that's what he had in mind. This is Joseph Ferris sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Join us at 1-800-449-8255.
Savage.
Lied about inventing the HIV virus as a means of genocide against people of color. Government lied. The government lied about a connection between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein, and a connection between 9-1-1-01 and Operation Iraqi Freedom. Government lied.
The government lied about creating the AIDS virus as a means of genocide against people of color. That was Reverend Jeremiah Wright, Barack Obama's pastor. This is Joseph Farah sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation. Do we have some people who are missing the action here of what is actually being said by this guy? Let's go to Robert in Kansas City.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good. What's on your mind, Robert?
Well, first of all, let me tell you who I am, where I come from. I'm originally from Missouri. I was raised a fundamentalist, and I am a conservative. I was raised in a black church when I was a kid, was treated just as nicely in a black church as I was in
a white church. Did they say things like this in the black church that you attended? Did you ever hear a pastor say anything remotely resembling what Reverend Wright said?
No, and what he said was wrong. And I'll tell you why. What he said was wrong was because the church pulpit is not one for politics. It's one for telling the good news and telling the good news to the people and letting them make up their mind how they want to believe and what they want to accept.
Okay, I appreciate that. You had told the call screener that you thought maybe the pastor had been misquoted, but now that you've heard him, you've heard his own words, him speaking his own words, I take it you have changed your opinion.
Well, anybody can be taken out of context to glorify anything they want to glorify, but the thing about it is what he said in total context was wrong.
All right, let's listen to some more from Jeremiah Wright. Let's go to clip number 6.
The government gives them the drugs, builds bigger prisons, passes a 3-strike law, and then wants us to sing God Bless America? No, no, no. Not God Bless America, God America that's in the Bible for killing innocent people. God damn America for treating our citizens as less than human.
That is the one that really pushed me over the edge. How about you? Let's go to Jim in New York. You're on the Savage Nation. Jim, your thoughts?
Yeah, hi, Joe. Question as far as whether we think Barack Hussein is lying. Of course he's lying. Anyone who would sit in the presence of someone like that for 20 years and listen can't convince me or anyone else that they're not interested in what's being said. But then again, he's no different from Hillary Rotten because she says things every day that she doesn't mean and she knows are outright lies. You know, and there's things that she won't even address, like pardoning... what's his name there, Mark Rich, the biggest criminal in U.S. history, or her husband, and condoning that and him donating all the money to them. But if you think about it, I've been writing letters and emails to both of these clowns for the last couple of years asking the same question. What about turning the Federal Reserve back to the American taxpayer? Neither one of them can lie because neither one of them would ever answer that. So that's the way I feel about both of them. They're worthless, two worthless people.
All right, thank you very much. Let's go to Jeffrey in San Diego. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Great, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I believe the situation right now with Pastor Wright and Obama just amplifies how correct Dr. Savage is. He says it all the time. We don't even know who Barack really is. We're just tapping into the surface. And, you know, he's a media creative phenomenon. This just highlights that and amplifies that. Who really is this guy? What does he really believe? I think the comments of Pastor Wright are disgusting, and I think if you look at it from someone who's, just think of a friend that you have that you've had for 20 years, I mean, are you going to continue your association with this friend and disagree with the core issues and the core beliefs of this person? No, so I think it's a disservice what Obama is doing to us right now, and we really need to get to know who this person really is. And,
actually, it may be a service to the country what we're discovering about Reverend Wright right now. I'm certainly glad that we were able to discover what Barack Obama has been listening to from the pulpit for the last 20 years. This guy, up until about 48 hours ago, was a leading presidential candidate. When we get back, I want you to consider this question. What would you do if your preacher said we shouldn't ask God to bless America, we should ask him to damn it? Would you stay there in that church? Would you continue to support it with your presence, your praise, and your contributions? This is Joseph Ferris sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation, 1-800-449-8255. Joseph Vera back, sitting in for Michael Savage here on the Savage Nation. How important is Jeremiah Wright to Barack Obama? Well, he's so important that until last week, when he was forced to step down, he had an official leadership role in Obama's campaign for the presidency. Yet Obama insists he does not think of his retired pastor, the man who inspired the name of the candidate's book, The Audacity of Hope. He doesn't think of him in political terms. But, you know, after listening to this America-hating, racist demagogue, it's awfully hard for me to think of him in anything but political terms. For instance, listen to this. Is this a spiritual homily from one of his sermons?
And they will not only attack you if you try to point out what's going on in white America, U.S. of KKKA.
How about this one, clip number 8?
We bombed Hiroshima, we bombed Nagasaki, and we nuked far more than the thousands in New York and the Pentagon, and we never batted an eye. We have supported state terrorism against the Palestinians and black South Africans, and now we are indignant because the stuff we have done overseas is now brought right back into our own front yards. America's chickens are coming home to roost.
That is bone-chilling. And to this, Obama has actually said with a straight face, I don't think that my church is actually particularly controversial. Wright has been the spiritual leader to Obama and his family for the last 20 years. He married Michelle and him and baptized their children. And, you know, just a few days ago, after all these public revelations of what his pastor believes and preaches, the heat finally got too great, and Obama was forced to distance himself from his longtime spiritual and political mentor. But the political necessities of the moment aside, what does it tell us about Obama and his candidacy that for 20 years he and his wife have been following this raving lunatic? To me, he either has no judgment, no discernment, or he tacitly agrees with the filth he has been listening to preach from the pulpit for the last two decades. What are your thoughts at 1-800-449-8255? Sal from Connecticut, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, thanks for bringing me on here. I think that, Bruce, what Dr. Savage said, we're hearing a lot of rhetoric and no substance. Here's a man that is appealing to the people like a rock star. And I question, like Dr. Savage, what is happening to our level of intelligence? What to even think that he should be going in any direction at all towards the presidency is ridiculous. We should right now let our voice be heard that this man should be relieve himself as a candidate and eliminate himself from the whole situation.
Well, you know that's not going to happen, Sal. I mean, you know that he has gotten to the point where he has more delegates to the Democratic National Convention than Hillary Rodham Clinton does. Now, you know, she can go ahead and win all the primaries from the rest of the primaries right up to the convention. She still probably doesn't have enough delegates to win the nomination. So what's going to happen?
Well, how could they a man who was associating with that Reverend Wright be even considered?
Appreciate the call, Sal. Listen, imagine yourself sitting in church on Sunday, and you're hearing some of what we just heard from the Reverend Wright. What would you do? Would you continue attending that church, or would you choose it as the place to marry your fiance? Would you choose this pastor as the one to baptize your children? Would you be a member for 20 years? Would you dedicate your book to him? Would you appoint him to a leadership position in your presidential campaign? That's what Barack Obama did, as amazing as that may seem. And for the life of me, I have to say, he did a masterful job today in his speech of trying to distance himself from Reverend Wright without, you know, chopping his head off. But was it enough? Is Barack Obama's campaign finished? Josh in Austin, Texas, your thoughts. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, here's what's so dangerous about the speech. Obama correctly identifies a number of issues that face this country. But what's so horrifying are the solutions that he presents. He presents universal health care. He presents ignoring the war on terror. He presents abandoning Israel. He presents taking down corporations. So it's not the fact that he can't identify issues. It's that he has no judgment when it comes to the solutions. So that's what's so scary about the speech. If you take the speech at face value, and I read it, I didn't listen to it. If you read it, it's very tempting to think this guy has it together. But then you get to the later end of the speech, you see what he actually proposes. And this is why I think it's so great that we heard this speech today. He actually exposes his weakness in the speech. He exposes the fact that he has no handle whatsoever on the solutions that our country needs.
Thank you for the call. Let's go to Marty in New York. Marty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Joseph. I just want to bring out two quick points. Obama has associated so closely for 20 years with Reverend Wright. Obama has to be part of the fabric of Reverend Wright's community of hatred. You know, there's an old saying, birds of a feather flock together. I mean, just as the last caller had indicated, does he think, I mean, what is he trying to insult our intelligence?
Well, that's a good question. You know, what? Think about this in the context of Obama's speech today. Is he saying that he never heard Wright say any of these racist, hateful remarks at any time from the pulpit in the last 20 years. Do you accept that? Do you believe that?
It's a big cross.
Let's go to Tracy in Norfolk, Virginia. Tracy, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I just wanted to make this comment right here. Every single individual that's a Catholic, that's of a Catholic religion, should get up and walk out and never turn around and walk into a Catholic church ever again. Because for over 20-plus years, what were those Catholic priests doing to the young white boys? But you have Catholics out here who still go to their church.
Well, you see, now that is true guilt by association, which is one of the things that Barack Obama's campaign is trying to suggest is how we should see his relationship to Reverend Wright. But what you're talking about, you're not talking about the actual priests who were molesting children walking out on them. You're talking about walking out on other priests. Am I right? Tracy.
Yes, I'm here.
Did you hear my question to you?
I'm sorry.
Thanks very much, Tracy. Let's move on. John in New York, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, I was listening to Obama's speech, and it sums up to this. It's like going to your kitchen, taking a large teaspoon of sugar and swallowing it. It's got lots of calories, but actually no nutritional value. And I truly think the guy's a backstabber to his grandmother. He put his grandmother on the same plane as this racist,
yes,
bigoted reverend. Tells me that he would backstab his own grandmother. Tells me this guy ain't worth my vote or my family's vote or any of my friends, because the way he tried to equate one to the other was totally off the mark. And he gives an interesting speech, but like I said, it has absolutely no substance whatsoever when it comes down to the real core facts of the issues. He's what he's done is he's covered, and it's a dog and pony show for his reverend. And I can understand why he was against the war now. You see, the reverend...
Well, he was against it before he was for it, and now he's against it again. But, you know, I think you really nailed it, John. I think you nailed it. What he did, he sold his grandma down the river in his speech today to try to score some political points. That's who Barack Obama is. Am I right?
Absolutely right, and he lost my vote. And after the speech today, what he to equate a racist anti-Semite? Did you hear him talk about what he said about the Palestinians, like they would commit state-sponsored terrorists? But he fails to mention that Israel's getting bombs lobbed over their country. They want the total destruction of a country. This guy is total fake, phony. He's not being sincere.
You mean Barack is fake, phony?
Yes.
Yeah, because Wright is telling you exactly what he thinks. I don't think there's anything fake or phony about him. I think he's telling us exactly what he thinks. And from my perspective, I think that Barack and Michelle Obama have been sitting in those pews for 20 years because they agree with him.
Exactly, 100%. I thank you so much for letting the people know, and what he done his grandmother, it's total disrespect. A woman that fed him, clothed him, took care of him, raised him, loved him, tugged him in at night, and he turns around and he puts the reverend in the same place. People need to wake up. Wake up.
Appreciate the call, John. Let's go to Robert in Houston, Texas. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yes, sir. I was commenting that this rhetoric here we're hearing from this Reverend Wright sounds a whole lot like stuff I heard back during the Watts riots. I remember a lot of that hatred. So all this change that Mr. Obama seems to be proposing is actually about a 40-year step backwards. I don't see how we're making progress by bringing up old hatreds and expounding on that.
Well, that is a very good point, and it leads me to another issue that I've been observing of late, in the past 24 hours particularly. For instance, on CBS today, on the early show, Dean Reynolds asked a rhetorical question. The question is whether the rhetoric is so remarkable. He's talking about the rhetoric of Reverend Wright, because in African American churches, pastors often seek to rouse their congregants to self-reliance by speaking harshly about the country's troubled racial past and the need to overcome it. In other words, this isn't really so unusual. what we've heard from the Reverend Wright in the last couple of days. This is indicative of what you will hear in black churches across America. And I've got to tell you, if that is true, that is even more alarming than the fact that Barack Obama has been attending this church for 20 years. My question to you is, do you think that there's anything to that? Is this representative of what is going on in black churches across this country? This is Joseph Farah sitting in for Michael Savage on The Savage Nation. Join us at 1-800-449-8255. Savage. Joseph Farah sitting in for the great one, Michael Savage. And, you know, the new line I'm hearing with regard to Barack Obama and his pastor, Jeremiah Wright, just in the last 24 hours, is this suggestion that this kind of talk by Jeremiah Wright is somehow, well, you know, maybe it's representative of what is heard in other black preachers. Do you buy that? And if that is true, is that even more alarming to you than this whole controversy of Barack Obama's relationship to this guy? You know, this is there is a strain of black Afrocentrism among some black pastors. I like to play clip number two to give you a feel for what Jeremiah Wright's theology, if you will.
Jesus was a poor black man who lived in a country and who lived in a culture that was controlled by rich white people. The Romans were rich. The Romans were Italians, which means they were European, which means they were white. And the Romans ran everything in Jesus's country.
Now, to his credit today, Barack Obama denounced some of this without very many specifics. We don't know exactly which of these offensive remarks uttered by Pastor Wright is that Barack Obama disagrees with. But let's hear a clip from him today that to compare and contrast with what you just heard.
We do not need to recite here the history of racial injustice in this country. But we do need to remind ourselves that so many of the disparities that exist between the African-American community and the larger American community today can be traced directly to inequalities passed on from an earlier generation that suffered under the brutal legacy of slavery and Jim Crow. Segregated schools were and are inferior schools. We still haven't fixed them 50 years after Brown versus Board of Education.
This is called changing the subject. You've got a pastor who's a loose cannon out there making all kinds of hateful, racist remarks, and what you do is just change the subject. Question, bottom line on all of this. What does this do to the candidacy of Barack Obama? 1-800-449-8255. Let's go to Meg in Chicago. Your thoughts.
My head hurts so much because of so much spin this guy's putting out. I live in Chicago. He is nothing but fluff. And he's got no solutions, only problems. He's the only one that keeps bringing up all the problems. And just like you say, he's constantly switching the subject because he has nothing to stand on. And he is not black. His mother is white. Therefore, the lineage comes from the mother. His father's African-American. And he went to Harvard, and his wife did not live in a poor neighborhood in Chicago. They lived in a gated community. He is full of garbage.
Thank you. Well, you know, take a look at Pastor Wright, too. I mean, I look at Pastor Wright. He's got lighter skin than Barack Obama. Clearly, this guy is not, you know, the descendants of all African-Americans. I mean, this guy's got a lot of white ancestry in him. So what does that make him? A self-hating white man? Let's go to Bill in San Francisco. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for taking my call. I just think people are missing the bigger point. This is less about racism and more about 20 years of indoctrination by a black liberationist theologian. I mean, he traveled down to Nicaragua back in the late 70s, early 80s, and was indoctrinated into Marxist-Leninist philosophy. This is a pastor. And for Obama to sit there and be indoctrinated for over 20 years to listen to this, it's about taking ownership of white property back from, you know, the Leninist movement.
Well, there's no question, Bill, that you know, this kind of liberation theology that has inspired Jeremiah Wright is indeed a descendant of Marxism. But at the same time, you can't deny that this guy is using race to foster his political objectives. Thanks very much for the call. Let's go to Jeremy in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. I wanted to know why I spent a year or so before I opened up my eyes and my heart to Christ. I want to know why anyone would sit there and tell me that they spent 20 years there and didn't receive nothing from them.
Well, Barack Obama says that he became a Christian by listening to this guy. That is one of the most remarkable things. You know, I'm tempted to send somebody out to Chicago to buy all of these recordings, these videos, these CDs of Jeremiah Wright and listen to them myself. I don't think, you know, it's 20 years of stuff. It's too much for any individual, but I'll bet you we're only hearing and seeing the very tip of the iceberg. Let's go to Gina in Gulfport, Mississippi. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Joseph, it's great to hear you on the radio. We're big fans of WorldNet Daily. And Barack Obama's candidacy, I don't know what you think about. This is a really bad thing, but I don't know if it has the power to take him down. But what you made, the point you made in your commentary today online, what if she were out of the race right now? What if we had already gotten rid of her? What would this do to Barack Obama if he were?
I know it. I think there were some radio talk show hosts who made a fundamental mistake, as I wrote today in my column, when they advocated Republicans switching over and voting for her in Texas and Ohio to save her candidacy. Because now, you know, if she were out of the race, it would be down to Barack Obama, who, in my estimation, is dead as a doornail. This is Joseph Era sitting in for Michael Savage on the Savage Nation.
Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash, Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. You know, when you talk about the enemy within, one could draw a very good comparison to the HIV virus, where a foreign virus invades a body and literally takes over a defense cell and duplicates itself inside the defense cell, and so then kills the body by destroying its ability to defend itself. It's almost identical to the Madeleine Albrights, who are now running around acting like they're our friends when in fact they're working for the enemy. So let's go to health for a minute. Of course, I talk every day about the health of a nation, but let's talk about the health of a body. Here's what Mark Twain said in Letters from the Earth. Disease, that is the main force, the diligent force, the devastating force. It attacks the infant the moment it is born. It furnishes it one malady after another, croup, measles, mumps, bowel troubles. teething pains, scarlet fever, and other childhood specialties. It chases the child into youth and furnishes it some specialties for that time of life. It chases the youth into maturity, maturity into age, and age into the grave. Mark Twain. And now I want to read you just one little entry that I wrote back in when it was published in 82 in Healing Children Naturally by yours truly on page 142 under chocolate. Now just listen to this, because many of you are chocolaholics and you've been told that chocolate's good. Mmm, it contains antioxidants. And mmm, I can eat more chocolate and I can even give it to Johnny in the morning. Mmm, let's give him some cocoa. Mmm, that's what good old Doc Brown told me. Pay no attention to those quacks in the nutrition field. Mmm, give Johnny anything he wants to eat, because here's this little shiny pill called Ritalin. We call it medication, not a pill. And that medication will keep Johnny real, real stable. So here's what I wrote. Chocolate comes from the cacao tree, an evergreen of the Coca-Cola family. It does not contain caffeine, but it does contain another stimulant, theobromine, which has effects quite similar to those of caffeine. When used to make cocoa, the amount of theobromine present would be comparable to the caffeine in a cup of weak coffee or tea, approximately 30 milligrams. Of course, chocolate is also a saturated fat and high in calories, and when used in cocoa, it is usually sweetened with sugar. Now listen to the following few sentences, please. Copper is also abundant in chocolate and must be avoided by hyperactive children who often have low zinc and high copper levels. For the same reasons, we in the Savage home never use cocoa or hot chocolate for our children. They may seem innocent enough, but in fact are great nutritional time bombs filled with sucrose, bleaches, copper, artificial flavorings, and excess calories. Stick to warm milk flavored with carob powder and sweetened with honey, which makes a fine bedtime drink. Now, I've given you a lot of information there. I'm sure that the oafs in the media will say, oh, Bashaw, you give that child cocoa. Never mind what anyone says. After all, I went to high school, and I know about golf. What are you? Oh, you give him meat and you give him chocolate. You give him whatever medication that good old doctor has you give him. Because those doctors have the interests of your child at heart. And they know, all of them know what good medication is. Well, it's identical to the political situation. You going to believe in Dr. Baker? Dr. Baker has just given you a recipe for destroying the nation. That's what old Dr. James Baker has just prescribed. He may look like the doctor of yesteryear. You know, after all, he speaks like the old, good old American doctors. Tall, good-looking, speaks with a nice southern drawl, comes from a good law firm, great family. Well, he reminds me of the doctors that used to advertise Chesterfield cigarettes in the magazines of the 1930s. Exactly the same thing. They would have doctors say that I smoke Chesterfield for health because it's good for the T-zone. They were doctors, too. Well, now we have political doctors who are just like that doctor who used to sell Chesterfield. And the case before you is good old Dr. Baker. So if I've gone a little off topic, I've gone right back to topic, because that's how I do it. And that's the test of a good mind, is the ability to go far afield and come right back to the point that he's been trying to make all along. Now, I know if I keep up this health stuff, what's going to happen. I'll get a call. I'll say, Mike, I'm like that guy, that woman on the plane that had to bring matches on the plane the other day for flatulence. Mike, I asked, is there something I could take so I don't have to take 10 books of matches on my next flight to Miami, Mike? What can I eat? What can I eat? Mike, while you're at on the thing for the matches, for the flatulence on the plane, can you give me something to make the down south part stand a little north, point north like a compass needle, Mike? I don't want to like that Viagra stuff. It gives me a headache and I see blue. And while you're at it, Mike, I'm going to get the same thing. I don't want to do health. Please, no health cures. Maine, Susie, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Dr. Savage. I just have a really quick question for you. I have a 16-year-old son. He goes to the gym two or three times a week, but he is overweight. I've decided to take him to a nutritionist, and I just want to know what your opinion of nutritionists are. Are they helpful? Can they make a difference?
Most of them are quacks, uneducated adults who know nothing. They have no credentials whatsoever, but they are selling you a bill of goods based on other people's work. Now, that doesn't mean there aren't an occasional nutritionist with real training and a real degree and really understand what they're talking about, but a lot of them are in it and don't really know what they're talking about. You have to look at their education. You have to look at their experience. You have to look at their certifications. Now, you may say, well, I'll go to an RD. They're even worse. The research dietitian degree is a complete reflection of the AMA principles of diet, which are totally toxic and know nothing about curing people through food. So I don't know what to recommend Well, I do know what to recommend, actually. I would recommend that you go to a medical doctor who has a subspecialty in nutrition. That would be what I would recommend. There are some very good doctors around who have spent a lot of years studying nutrition, and that's where I would take my son. As far as weight loss, I mean, there's no mystery to it. You know, it takes self-control, and it takes controlling the diet. I don't know what you need to go to a doctor for that for. Do you?
No, actually, his medical doctor did recommend this nutritionist to him, so I think
Well, so you're working with a medical doctor who probably hasn't, but the problem is, who is the nutritionist? A lot of them are self-taught. They read three articles in Cosmopolitan, and suddenly they're a nutritionist, so you got to look into that. Thanks for the call. I have a show that could be called How Not to Make Friends and Influence People. But you got to think about it. How did people survive for eons without nutritionists? How did people survive for eons without going to these quacks and taking a Ritalin? How did your great-grandfather survive? How did they survive the Middle Ages eating shoe leather and they were still able to read and write? How is that possible that Western civilization was built before Ritalin was discovered by the quack establishment called the pharmaceutical medical establishment? How is it possible? There must have been people who were hyperactive then. It must have been. How did they deal with it? Everybody knows people like that. They didn't need drugs. They walked a lot. They talked a lot. But they somehow got through life without having to take a drug to turn it into a zombie. 1-800-449-8255. It's the parents who are behind ADHD. They're lazy and they're feeding the child junk food. 90% of the ADHD cases can be cured if the parents were educated as to how they're poisoning their child, number one, and how they're being lazy and not feeding the child properly. Much of this information is well established. It's been lost because the pharmaceutical and medical establishments want you to lose it, just as the political establishment wants you to forget history in order to manipulate you. It's the same exact thing. It's called the establishment. They control everything. Now, if you look at the control of the media by the few madmen who control it all, you'll find out, unfortunately, they also control the educational establishment through boards that they sit on. They also control the pharmaceutical establishment through boards. They sit on multiple boards. So the same power-mad lunatic who runs the media that tells you things about food that are untrue and tells you things about politics that are patently false will also be peddling you drugs that are unnecessary and peddling you diets that are clearly harmful. That's called interlocking corporate directorships. Check it out. It was once well-established and well-understood that interlocking corporate directorships would ultimately lead to the demise of the American. They were 100% right, and we're living through it now. I'm getting the calls right now, and I'll do them. Actually, this is fun. Beverly in Houston, Texas, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Can I ask you something, Dr. Savage?
Do you know that cancer is a leading cause of children's death? Did you know that? Did you know that one of the most suppressed statistics of our time is that more children under the age of 15 die of cancer, including leukemia, than of any other cause aside from accidents? Do you know why we don't hear about children dying of cancer? Do you know why we don't see children who are bald in the back rooms of hospitals? Because the AIDS racketeers have knocked up the entire sympathy racket. You are only allowed to hear about AIDS and the suffering of AIDS and relationship to AIDS and only AIDS victims and AIDS this and AIDS that. And the children are left behind dying in the back rooms of the hospitals because they don't have a voice to speak for them. That's one of the reasons I wrote this book.
What can women do for PMS? I went to a doctor.
Oh, boy, did you open up a very, very tragic subject, because there are things you can do, but I'm not about to give you medical information on this show at this time. I really only wanted to bring up this book because the ADHD came up as a break from the political discussion, but there are many things you can do for PMS, and I think truthfully, and this is not a bad idea, if you go to one of these mega health food operations around, you know, like Whole Foods kind of thing. Is there one near you?
Yes, sir, and I take a lot of vitamins, and I eat salmon.
No, but listen to me. If you go there, you know, you can get an education unto itself. Now, some of it's quackery and some of it's hucksterism, but some of what you're going to read in some of those brochures is worth thinking about. I'll tell you where I'd begin today, Beverly, with anything. The Internet has become the great unifier of knowledge. Some of it's junk, but some of it's excellent. I would simply do a search on the PMS and health, and I would read as much as I could, and I would sift and I would sort, and then I would try to consult with a medical doctor, an MD, who definitely has training in nutrition. Don't just go to any old Joe Blow MD who knows nothing about nutrition. They need to have studied nutrition. They need to specialize in it along with their medical degree, and you're going to get some wonderful advice right there, but I'm not going to give any advice today on this subject. Salim, a Muslim in Houston, Texas. Welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Thanks for having me on the show, Dr. Savage. Just wanted to say, yeah, I support the show in the sense that one of the things I know as a Muslim is that we all have to fight for our freedoms of speech. And if you're not able to have freedom of speech, then what does a Muslim guy like me have a chance of holding on to freedoms?
Yeah, and you wouldn't even have a chance to dislike me verbally. For example, if I lost my freedom of speech, then people who dislike me would be next. Exactly. We'd be living in a dictatorship. I mean, that's the lesson here. That's absolutely the lesson, Salim.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, I'm a trained biologist, so permit me to digress for a moment. I was reading various internet stories about an introduced species of fish that was introduced into an ecosystem. They brought it from some foreign country to kill something or other, and it wound up devouring all of the native species of fish and took over the entire lake. And then I was thinking about radical Islam. As a sort of, it's certainly not a different species, but it's a different species of religion than any we've ever seen. And it's devouring all other religions around the planet. It cannot cooperate, you see, with any other religion. It says, you do it our way or we kill you. That's all. Simple. So it's sort of the piranha fish of religions. The radical Islamists practice a piranha-like religion. Let's put it to you that way. Now that we're developing the idea a little bit more. But I'll go back to the biological story for you again. Let us say you have a body of water, a fairly large one, and there are many species of fish and fowl and various plants in there. And then you introduce a strange type of fish from, let us say, Egypt. And the reason you do so is because you're an environmentalist and you don't want to use toxic sprays to kill, let's say, mosquitoes. So you bring in a type of fish from Egypt because you read somewhere in a book while you were getting your master's degree from Duquesne Community College before you were hired by the state of Michigan, for example, because you're a dummy and you couldn't get any other job, so you took a job for the government. So the dummy says, I read about this and it killed the mosquitoes in Egypt. Let's bring it in. And you bring it in, you put it in the lake, and you wake up 2 years later and almost all the other species of fish are killed. And this one has proliferated and taken over the lake. That's exactly what's going on in America today as a result of illegal immigration. And illegal immigration is tied to radical Islam, directly tied there, tied at the hip. Had the doors to America not been taken off the hinges by Bill Clinton under Doris Meisner, the INS chief, because I remember her name. I remember her so well. Because for years I railed against her. I thought she should be jailed for what she was doing to America back in the early 90s when I started the radio. I said, take her out of the INS commissioner. As I said, she's killing America. She's letting too many flood in. She's bringing in particularly too many Middle Easterners who will wind up destroying us. Nothing was done. In fact, Bush came along. We prayed he would be better. He's much worse on immigration, far worse. Whereas Bill Clinton pulled the door to Mexico and the rest of the world open, Bush unscrewed the hinges and threw the door into the Gulf of Mexico. Now, I am telling you as I sit here, and I don't really give a rat's behind if anyone is insulted, radical Islam is incompatible with the rest of the world. And I want to know why. I want to know what it is about Islam itself, the Quran itself, that permits so many people to misinterpret it and become suicide bombers. What is it about this religion? I mean, if I read the Old Testament, nowhere does it say I should kill my neighbor if he doesn't practice my religion. If I read the New Testament, the Christian Bible, nowhere in that Bible does it say kill a Buddhist if he doesn't become a Christian. If I read Hindu tractates, nowhere does it say kill Buddhists if they don't become Hindus. And if I read the beautiful lyrical poetry of Buddhism, nowhere does it say kill the others if they do not become Buddhists. There is only one piranha religion on the planet. That piranha religion will kill all of us unless we stop it cold now. Stop it cold now where there's no nation left. and I don't need anyone in the media to confirm what I'm saying. I need to confirm what they're thinking. They don't need to confirm what I'm saying, because they don't have an idea what the heck they're talking about.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day to the last syllable of recorded time, and all our yesterdays have lighted fools the way to dusty death. Out, out, brief candle. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. The sound and fury quote from Shakespeare's Macbeth. He's talking about the ephemeral nature of life and how brief it is. Life's but a walking shadow, a poor player that struts and frets his hour upon the stage and then is heard no more. It is a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing. I think many of us feel this and don't talk about it. We take the Prozac, or we take the psychic Prozac called television, or the psychic Prozac called football or baseball or basketball or rap music or whatever it may be, or the crack or the cocaine or the marijuana or the alcohol or whatever it may be, or the running. And you can get very, very cynical about it all and say, what's the point of trying if it's all a charade and we're going to die anyway? You know, that's depressing. And there are many answers to that question that are life-affirming. There are many reasons to go on. Again, to go back, I learned so much in my childhood, I didn't even know I was learning it. That's the beautiful part of it. In that sense, I would say I had a very rich childhood, because so much was seen and heard and overheard. And I look back now, look, here's a story I told maybe once for 2 seconds relating to the ephemeral nature of life and how you can really go down, you know, off the deep end if you look at this the wrong way and you don't have the right spiritual or emotional support. There was a woman in the neighborhood in Queens, attached houses. I can't get any more detailed. The attached houses, which to us was a gigantic step up. It was like the Queens Palace from where I had come from, a little green yard. And one of the neighbors in the block, he was really high class because he was a doctor. So he had a wife who had a nervous breakdown, so-called. I don't even think they use the phrase anymore, nervous breakdown. I don't even know what it is. What happened was she stayed at home all day, and she wandered the streets of Queens, or that neighborhood, and she would take people's arms and say, what's the meaning of living if we're only going to die? Now, she had 2 children, and the other women didn't know what to say to her. She could not understand why she should live if only she was going to die. Then she would say, but my children are also born to die. I mean, that spooked out a lot of the women in the neighborhood, so they stopped talking to her. Now, maybe she was, in her own way, touching upon the sound and fury quote from Shakespeare of tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow. And haven't you seen that picture? And how did... Let's say you're a middleweight and you're getting in the ring with the other guy and both of you pray to God to win. Would you then say, well, the other guy is just defending his honor. He wants to win too. Would you take his side or would you take your side?
Well, of course I'm going to always take my side. But
well, why don't you take the side of the U.S. Marines then, instead of telling me that the other guys are patriots?
Take the side of our troops. I support our troops 1,000,000%. I'm totally...
Wait, how could you support our troops 1,000,000% if you're arguing that the Iraqis who are killing them are just patriots defending their homeland?
I'm giving you a hypothetical. I'm not saying that all Iraqis are patriots. There are a lot of them that are not. But a great majority of them are, and they're just trying to defend their country.
Nonsense. The patriots want their country to be democratized, and they don't want women in burqas, and they don't want Islam forced down people's throats, and they don't want to burn Jews, and they don't want to kill Christians. Those are the real patriots. These are vermin. These are internationalist terrorists. They're vermin. That's why we're killing them.
Not the Iraqi people. I'm sorry, Michael. I respect...
I didn't say the Iraqi people. I said the Iraqi people want democracy or relative democracy. But the bums we're fighting in Fallujah and Najaf are not the Iraqi people. They are fanatics who want to export their religion and dominate the world, and B, they are surrounded by foreigners who aren't even Iraqis, Harry.
Those are the ones who are our major enemy. I agree with you there. I do.
So what are we arguing about?
We're arguing about that I think that we are categorizing and generalizing that a lot of these Iraqi citizens who are, and I really believe, I may be wrong, Michael, but I really believe that they are trying to defend their country from an occupying force. Yes, many of them want us there because without us there, it would be bloody civil.
Well, I don't buy that. I don't buy that. We liberated them from a monster, the Hitler or Stalin of their world, and now they're shooting us in the back. Let them go to hell. We liberated them. Now we expect something from them. With freedom comes responsibility. It's not a one-way ticket. Now they've got to perform for us. They've got to join the family of man. They can't go back to their psychotic ways.
Michael, like I said, I respectfully agree to disagree. I respect your opinion. I love your show. And you know what?
You know why, Harry? Because a good part of you actually agrees with me, even though you're probably a lifetime Democrat. I don't intend to change you. I'm not here to front for George Bush. But you got to understand what I'm saying, Harry. The majority of Iraqis want the radicals out of their country. They don't want to live in Afghanistan under the Taliban. They want the freedoms that we have here. And in order for them to enjoy it, they're going to have to play ball with us. They're going to have to do it our way. We're not going to have to do it their way.
I agree. But again, I just hate generalizing, saying that all the Iraqis are insurgents and that they're terrorists. They're not. They're really not.
But what we're saying, the same thing. I just said most of them want these bums out of there. Most Iraqis do not want this fat cleric screaming holy war. Most Iraqis want the Pakistanis and the Iranians and the Saudi terrorists who have come in to help that Sadr out of there. So we're saying the same thing in different ways, Harry.
Well, okay, maybe we are. Maybe we're looking at it from two different points of view.
There it is. You see, that's the problem, is we're 3,000 miles away, Harry. If we were over a cup of coffee, we'd probably realize we agree more than we disagree.
Savage.
Try to find out the origin of the word sedition. And I found it. We know what it is. But if you look in your dictionary, you'll find that seduce follows sedition, which is interesting unto itself. The word right after seditious is seduce. What are the synonyms for seduce? We're talking about the Hollywood left. Allure, inveigle, entice, attract, tempt, bait, bribe, lure, induce, defile, deprave, lead astray, violate, prostitute, rape, or deflower. What are the antonyms for seduce? The opposite of the word seduce. Preserve, protect, and guide. Michael Savage and the Savage Nation are the antonym to the seduction of Hollywood. They are committing sedition. The antonym to what they're doing is to preserve, protect, and guide. Do you think they're preserving and protecting and guiding America by these attacks on the president in a time of war or on the eve of war? Do you think they're preserving and protecting and guiding America when our troops need to gird their morale in order to face these demons, many of whom would die for their cause, the opposition? I don't. And that's why I say to you, Saddam's Hollywood puppets is as good a statement about them as any. Las Vegas, Nevada. James, you're on the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. 2 points. The first, as proof that the Hollywood types are only anti-Republican in concert with the left-wing media, is there's only one Hollywood actor in history who was ridiculed for daring to step into the political realm, and that was Ronald Reagan. All these other types are getting a pass. I find it fascinating that none of them have.
Yeah, no, you're right. But my main point is that all of these Sheens and the others never said a word when Clinton was dropping bombs on the Serbian people, not on the Serbian troops, but on the Serbian civilian population, killing men, women, and children, 2,000 killed, according to UN reports, hospitals, schools, insane asylums, buses were blown up by the bombs. Not one person has gone to prison for that war crime. And the actors said nothing when the bombs were falling. In fact, to add insult to injury, they made a movie called Wag the Dog to give a bigger lie to the bigger lie. Remember that?
My other point, why does it always seem that the types that get involved in this as far as Hollywood goes are those whose careers are either, one, on decline, two, are over, or three, haven't really gotten off the ground yet?
Yeah, no, I've noticed that as well. I've made a good point, and my old joke used to be that the lower they're behind, the higher their liberalism. And the more they're behind has fallen, the higher their liberalism. That's a more crude way of putting it. They start out with tight butts. Then as the butt falls, their activism on the left goes up. In other words, the less attractive they are, the less attractive they are. You know, in a way, James, when you think about it, the less attractive they are, the less attractive they are says it all. I mean, really, how many Americans really agree with them?
Mike Farrell's had more FaceTime in the last 2 days than he's had in the last 25 years.
I actually had never heard of him. Now he sounds like a duplicate of Ed Asinine, like a twin. Thank you for that call. Let's see. Anti-war protests coinciding with International Human Rights Day. Oh, God. When I hear the word human rights, I make sure my AR-15 is oiled. Because if anyone comes to get me, it's going to be human rights Nazis. I guarantee it. Let's see. Connecticut protest, the reverend. There's a lot of reverends out there. You know, they're very reverent of what? I don't know. The reverend of anti-Americanism, Reverend Sharpton. Does he actually have a congregation in Brooklyn? Because I don't see the collar. Can somebody enlighten me? If you're a reverend, don't you have to wear a collar and have a church somewhere where you lead people on Sunday? Connecticut protester. All right, let's listen to clip 71. Connecticut protester. Go ahead.
War is a weapon of mass destruction. It will wreak massive destruction on the people of Iraq as well as on our own troops. So we think diplomatic means have not in any sense been exhausted, and we need to pursue those. The vast majority of people in this country, in fact, are quite ambivalent, that they're frightened, that they're uncertain, and they're looking for a place to voice that ambivalence and uncertainty. Those of us who are out here today believe strongly that war is moron.
What do you know about the vast majority of American people? You and your girlfriends? That's the vast majority. They all speak for the American people, her and her girlfriends. They meet in some Wiccan somewhere, practicing some Wiccan religion, sitting in some teepee somewhere, you know, drinking blood, dining on pigeon feathers and rat dung. You know, God in heaven, where do they get there? Yeah, okay. I can get down and dirty with them. I know how to get down into the Bronx level, believe me. Want to go up, I go up. You want to go down, I go down. You want to do the legitimate argument, do the legitimate argument. You want to do the scatological, I'll do the scatological. You want to do the whatever, I'll do it. I'll do the dance. Here's another one. Let's see clip 73. Here's another protester. Another one. Let's hear this one.
We don't want the U.S. to continue to act in the world as a superpower that doesn't really realize the consequence of its actions on the people in the countries where it goes in and...
Shut up, you snotty idiot. What do you know? Shut her up! Shut up, this snot-nose. Snot-nose, little prostitutes. They send them to college. They become degenerate in 1 month. They hand them condoms on the way in. The big, mean-faced, clipped-haired brigade. That's who's running the colleges today. Who do you think took them over? Mean-faced, clipped-haired oven stuffers. They look like they work in Bergen-Belsen. They give them a cap and gown. All right, girls, here are your condoms. The orientation session. First thing you got to do is sleep with your sorority sister to fit in around here.
No, we don't think that America knows what it's doing in superpower. We were never taught to hit back.
Brainwashed little liberal lemming. Next one. Give me the next one. Let's go through them. Go ahead. Next one. 74. Let me hear this one.
Every time I come to a rally, I see new people joining us. I see an incredible diversity of people.
Yeah, you're full of garbage. What do you know about diversity, moron? You don't see any conservatives in that crowd, do you? Diversity of what?
That are in growing
numbers.
Wait,
stop. Okay, I'm going to be fair to this jerk. Start it again.
Every time I come to a rally, I see new people joining us. I see an incredible diversity of people, and the movement is growing, of people with a strong consciousness throughout this country that are, in growing numbers, standing up against war with Iraq.
Yeah, full of garbage. Graded diversity. Yeah, you got your black brothers and your Hispanic brothers in the crowd now. My God, that's all that's on their mind. These people are going to kill us. The left is going to kill us. They've destroyed the fabric of our society. They've destroyed marriage as an institution. They perverted our children's minds. They have destroyed the church. They are going to destroy our war capacity. They've almost destroyed our police department. Thank God the police are still strong enough to fight for America as the thin blue line, protecting us from the vermin out there that would wreck us on a daily basis. And now they want to deball the military. Well, I rest my case. I rest my case. This is a great, great moral war. We are facing an enemy that has clearly said we are going to kill you or convert you. Saddam Hussein has been linked to Osama bin Laden in over 100 incidents going back at least a decade. I have that article for you. Iraq and Al-Qaeda are cooperating along with Yasser Arafat and the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade. Why don't you just add MSNBC to that list? If this media existed in 1940, it'd be a lampshade.
Savage.
I had lunch in the Italian district of San Francisco called North Beach. So I'm eating my Petrolli sole. Whatever it is, like sole, basically. We call it Petrolli. And looking out the window, and a lot of bums are walking by. I don't mean homeless. I mean liberal bums that don't work. I've seen them around for 20 years. Sort of shabbily dressed, but not bums. Really, you know, looking seedy. So my assistant says to me, how do they have the money to walk around in the middle of a day and not work every day I come by here? I said, this is crazy Czech City. Most of these people are living either on a minor inheritance of, let's say, the father left them 200 grand 20 years ago, or they're living on SDSI, which is crazy checks. See, anyone in San Francisco who's called a poet gets a crazy check, and by definition, they should. Anyone who writes poetry should be given a crazy check at SDSI. But why should you support so-called poets who sit around stoned all day and write garbage in cafes with crazy checks? You talk about waste. Anyway, San Francisco's filled with, I call it crazy check city. Everywhere you turn, people are on crazy checks, SDSI. And do they hate this country? Oh, my God. They walk around still muttering, yuppie scum, yuppie scum, yuppie scum. It's unbelievable to me what you see in this city. It is such a holdover in so many areas. But look, there's good and there's bad, mainly bad.
Yeah.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
It's fine. I'm an expert. I'm an expert in everything. Well, you know, as an older guy, I may as well be. Was an expert better than me? Tell me where you're going to find an expert better than me. Half the people who are experts, have you ever found out what was really going on? I love when they go on there. I love the child experts on television. I could like to see what they're doing the night before at 3 in the morning. The first question I ask any psychologist, psychiatrist, or child psychiatric therapist is, do you have a wife and children? First question. If they don't, I laugh at them and, you know, take a walk. What are you talking about? Half of them have whack jobs like you can't believe. If I could tell you in my life how many sickos I've met who went into therapy just to manipulate people and have sex with them, I could count more than on two hands. It's rife with the sickest people in these therapy clinics. Therapy. Whenever I hear that a drug addict, when it was given therapy, I said, oh, they're getting safe drug treatment, meaning they're getting safer drugs. Unbelievable what a society we live in. It's enough to turn you into a monk. So I don't have the, you know, what's the perfect thing? I've read that humor is important. You got to laugh together. How long is that laugh? You know what I love is, like, I'm an older guy. So I read what the younger guys are writing in their 30s now. They're all trying to figure out who they're looking for. So they write things in columns like, you got to find someone who you can envision sitting on the bed with when you're 80 and laughing with. That is so unrealistic. No one's sitting on their bed at 80 and laughing. Let me tell you. No one's laughing on the edge of their bed at 80. I can tell you from experience, they're not on the edge of their bed laughing. But you can't look at it in that kind of picture. Well, what is humor? Humor. How long does humor last with another person? It usually turns into sarcasm. You know what the humor of that? If you marry someone who's particularly humorous, you know what that humor is going to be within a year or two? Sarcasm directed at you. Bitter, nasty sarcasm. I'm a cynic. What can I tell you? You ever watch that show Lucky Louie on HBO? It's actually dirty and funny. It really is. I'm not supposed to like it. I laugh hysterically. I love that show. He's a great actor. Who is that guy? They're like bald. He's a muffler shop owner. What I loved about the last segment of Lucky Louie on HBO, which was particularly funny, was they have a brat for a daughter. The kid is some actress. Mean, throws the birthday cake over in the black neighbor's apartment. She does everything wrong. So they both decide they hate the child, and they say it to each other. Now, the audience laughs. It's filmed in front of a live audience because many people actually dislike their children. But we have so idealized and romanticized what children are, that they're all angels sent by God. They're not. A good number of them are monsters, and some are absolutely evil. Some are born evil. Children have to be taught how to be. They have to be raised to be people. Witness otherwise what they become. You don't have to look any further than the children coming out of these monstrous ghettos in the cities with no parents. Look what they become. Like Noah Ferentz, no ability to understand what the other human being feels, no sense of compassion, no sense of emotion to the other human being. A child must be taught these things.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com, contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage, that's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. And God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech. Why would a newspaper man call those who cut people's heads off and kill our troops insurgents, rebels, instead of terrorists? Why? Now, you have to go back 30 years to understand how perverted and twisted they are. Years ago, there was a movement in this country to change the way we looked at deviants. And as a result, they have blurred moral boundaries. They promoted social disintegration. And as a result of the agitation of these 30 years, as Daniel Patrick Moynihan once wrote, deviance has been defined down. So, for example, years ago, we understood what a bum was. We knew what a junkie was. We knew what a pervert was. We knew what a suicidal maniac was, right? And most of us still do. But guys like those who published the Chronicle could still call guys who cut people's heads off and kill our boys insurgents because they don't call junkies junkies. They call them injection drug users. They don't call promiscuous teenagers sluts. They call them acting out their sexual imperative, for example. They don't call them homeless bums who need to be institutionalized. They call them rebels. They call them sort of Walt Whitman-esque like rebels, rebelling against a oppressive society. And so what they do is they try to turn everything that's deviant into the norm, and everyone who is normal into the deviant. And so they're insane. That's why I say liberalism is a mental disorder. And if you're going to let those in the asylum dictate to you what you should be thinking, you're going to wind up crazy. So what have they done? They've taken deviance and eliminated the concept completely. So, for example, they've diffused your strong sanctions against pedophilia. They call it part of a normal erotic continuum, pedophilia. Anyone who took their own life was considered a suicidal person, and you would try to stop them in the past for their own good. There's no greater thing but to keep a person from killing them, to jump off a bridge, you save them. That's why people jump in the water to save others. The mentally whacked out liberals of this country have now twisted assisted suicide, which is a very stigmatized behavior, suicide, into just another treatment that should be available to a patient. Everyone has become a client, and so they have transformed your ideas about what you should and what you should not tolerate. You should tolerate all of these deviances and never call them a deviance. But you must never tolerate religious dogma. That's the one thing you must never tolerate. And so, consequently, they've broken down the moral boundaries. They have romanticized the insane. And they've created a state of social disintegration in this country, is what they have done. Without social norms, there can be no society whatsoever. There was a wonderful book written on this subject that you probably never heard of. It was an academic book called The Politics of Deviance by Ann Hendershot, written in 2002. It came and went. No one ever heard of it, but it's a brilliant book. There's some great things out there. Really brilliant people understand what's going on. And my job is to teach it to you every day in an entertaining format. And I try to do that for you. So just be aware of the fact that your tolerance is actually a reflection of your loss of clarity. Your tolerance for virtually anything and your anything-go attitude is not a mark of liberalism. It's a mark of the degeneration of your ability to judge anything. And yet you maintain your right to judge Christians, don't you? You'll judge Christians, but you won't judge Muslims. You'll judge America's troops, but you won't judge the throat cutters. You'll judge George Bush, but you won't judge Bill Clinton for what he did when he dropped bombs on the Serbian people. So you're really warped. You're just a warped, biased personality who pretends that you're an enlightened, advanced, futuristic human being. But you're not. And now most of America has awakened to the fact that, A, they're not alone, and B, that they actually have the power. And you're now in the minority, those of you on the other side. You're on the dark side of reality. And we are going to try and save this country, period, end of story. Don't you understand it's really a battle? And who started it? We didn't start it. In fact, you probably grew up in the same world we grew up in. But because you were so quick, you on the other side of this culture war, to embrace the concepts of radicalism, you think that you have discovered something new and you feel you've broken the chains of oppression. When in fact, I can hear your chains rattling. The more you scream that you have broken the chains of oppression, the louder I hear your chains rattling. You are nothing but a monkey in a cage. And the more you scream about racism and homophobia and sexism and thisism and thatism and bigotry, the more I know you are nothing but a monkey in a cage and your chains are rattling. And let me tell you something, I'd like to free you. I really would like to unlock that chain around your leg and get that ball and chain off your foot, because you are a prisoner. And I don't even blame you. You're a product of our society. You've been brainwashed since childhood from television shows like that on KQED and PBS. I never let my children watch Big Bird. Never. I turned the show off. I knew it was a propaganda tool. And it was. And so forth and so on. You get the picture. Fill in the blanks yourself. Take the pen and follow it through. Be a John Nagy. Fill in the picture. We're facing an enemy worse than Hitler. Worse than Hitler. Why do I say worse than Hitler? Because Hitler was unabashedly evil. Everyone knew that. Everyone could see that. It was no ambivalence about Hitler and the Nazis. Everyone in America understood he was our enemy. But now we're facing an enemy that's far worse than Hitler. Radical Islamists who have wrapped themselves in a religion and stolen a religion. And because of that, all of you bigoted leftists who have no qualms about attacking Christians won't say boo about the radical Islamists. Guys like Phil Bronstein in the Chronicle, I have no idea why he's still there, a failing newspaper that's in the toilet. The circulation goes down and down, and they keep a guy like that there. Not a positive word about what went on in Iraq. Not a salute to the troops. Not an attack upon these vile enemies of freedom and of everything that we believe in. How did this happen to a man? I'm sure he was a good man, raised probably in the same kind of family I was raised in. How does a man raised in the same background wind up like this? I will tell you how, and how millions of other decent people wind up in that time warp of unreality called liberalism. That is, they live in a cocoon where their ideas and only their ideas and that of their close circle are expressed. They never, ever meet anyone outside their small circle of liberalism, of liberals. They agree with each other. It's a small, closed circuit. And therefore, if they go to a dinner party at a fancy person's home, they express enlightened ideas. They know there's global warming, even though the scientific community is out on that. If ever there is a dissident opinion raised at one of these dinner parties, which is very rare, because no one is permitted into these cloistered environments unless they've been pre-approved, and unless the gatekeepers have approved of them and given them entrance to their fancy little parties of stupidity, why, that person is laughed at as a sort of eccentric, to be accepted sort of as an eccentric who's a fool of the other side. A throwback to, let's say, more primitive times in America. And so they live in their own world. The newspapers fail. The circulation keeps going down. And they don't even understand that they're going out of business because there are no consequences. There are no consequences because there's no ownership. If there was still a person who owned the newspaper, they'd fire the hack and say, damn it, my circulation is dying. I want a report on my desk by Friday on why the people aren't buying your paper. And then by next Friday, I want a report on my desk of how to make them buy the paper. I give that report in the next 5 seconds. Stop publishing anti-family, anti-Christian, anti-American, anti-military, anti-police stories in your damn newspaper. Start publishing stories that support those things, and your sales will go up. They know that, though. And we say, well, ipso facto, if they know that, why don't they publish those stories? The answer is because they don't want to, because then they won't be invited to these silly soirees. They won't be invited to the silly soirees if they start publishing things like that. So in other words, these newspapers, these anachronisms called newspapers, are simply social commentary for those who own them. It's their way of saying, here's what I believe in, through the factotums called writers, whoever writes for them. How do you explain talk radio in general being a boom industry? How do you explain a show like mine, a one-man band? Yeah, I have people who work with me. They're wonderful people. But it's all about me 3 hours a day. How do you explain this phenomenon? In a city like San Francisco, as radically twisted to the left as it is, I will tell you there's an underserved population in this city, for example. I meet them every day. I walk the streets and people come out of cafes and restaurants, older people generally, but not only older people. And they look at me with hope and they say, Michael Savage, I love what you say. I only wish that we heard it more. Over and over and over again, I hear it wherever I go. And I hear it at first here, and then I hear it there, and then it becomes a roar. And one day it's going to become more than a roar. One day this will become the dominant viewpoint in America again. Only it's got to become that sooner rather than later if we are to defeat the enemy. What enemy am I talking about? Radical Islam is the enemy external, and the enemy internal is the ACLU, the National Lawyers Guild, and the entire pack of anti-family, anti-Christian, anti-American deviants. Those are your enemies. They're trying to destroy your country.
Yeah. You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. To an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.
Many Democrats had more positive things to say about your comprehensive proposal than many Republicans did. Do you think a Democratic Congress gives you a better shot at comprehensive immigration reform?
You know, I should have brought this up. I do. I think we have a good chance. And thank you. It's an important issue, and I hope we can get something done on it. I meant to put that in my list of things that we need to get done. I would hope Republicans have recognized that we've taken very strong security measures to address one aspect of comprehensive immigration reform.
Worker provision.
Well, that's got to be an integral part of a comprehensive plan. When you're talking comprehensive immigration reform, one part of it is a guest worker program where people can come on a temporary basis to do jobs Americans are not doing.
Amnesty is in the air. That's why his dad and Clinton are such pals. It's all worked out. John McCain, not enough hair. Hillary wins. She's got more hair. I mean, if you were to Giuliani, McCain, Pataki, and Clinton, Hillary wins hands down, more hair. It's all hair. That's what it comes down to. The people go for hair. If they get a long-haired male, the Republicans, he might stand a chance. Some kind of rocker, right-wing rocker could win. With tattoos, he might win, I swear, the way the world is. Carl Levin, I bet you he thinks he could be vice president one day. God, the egos on these guys, I just can't imagine being them. I can't understand what they think of themselves off camera, like at home alone in a toilet. How do they live with themselves? They're so important. They're such important people. Like when they sit down in the toilet, I mean, do they say, I'm an important person and I'm on the toilet now? How do they deal with that? When they sit down with a fork in front of a television set to eat, what do they say? I'm an important person with a fork in front of a television set and I'm eating mashed potatoes? When do they not be important persons? When do they start being people? I don't know. I think there's a certain degree of we know that there has to be a certain degree of madness to be a politician. You have to, you know, who would want to do this? Why do you want people to adulate you and know everything about everything you do every second of the day? Who would want that? I'm a recluse. Radio is perfect for me. I never liked employees. I don't like telling anyone what to do. I'd rather do it myself. I'd rather take the garbage out myself. You know why? Because I know how to put the garbage in the can better than a maid. If she put the garbage in the can, I'd go down there. She would do it wrong. I don't like the way she put it in the garbage can. She'd probably turn the bag upside down and throw the loose garbage into the can. Me, I tie the bag up and put it in the can so it doesn't rot. I'm giving an example. Most things I'd rather do myself. I'd rather do my own laundry. Why? I know how much soap to use so I don't itch. Also, if they throw a towel in too high a heat, you know how many years it took me? You know how many decades it took me to figure out why certain towels turn into like straw? You spend $100 on a towel, wash it wrong once, it's straw. You may as well be in a Ukrainian boys club in 1940. The towel is like sandpaper with one wrong drying. You got to read the label on like Egyptian cotton. It's crazy what you have to do to wash a towel right. Cold water, warm water, light water, spin dry, low. You can't give it to a maid. Everything to a maid is like industrial, like from Guatemala. They figure that everybody's like a manual laborer working in Greece. And so they wash your clothing with so much detergent and they dry it hot. I mean, it burns the towel. That's the way you do overalls from a guy who was underneath a car all day, let's say working in a chicken processing plant. So what I'm saying, I'd rather do my own towels and my own underwear. Otherwise, I, like, ruin my skin. And that's why I'd rather analyze things for myself instead of turning to, like, Dick Morris. I'm going to listen to Dick Morris tell me what I'm supposed to think, or a guy on television. That's why you love me. You know why you love me. It's because I'm like you. That's the truth. You know what I did last night? I swear. Should I admit this? What do I care? I watched Sopranos reruns on Comcast. I love that show in a rerun. Like, I know, like, what's going to happen. The only ones I don't like watching when they kill a gay guy, I hate that. I don't like gratuitous violence. Many of you have me all upside down anyway. You got me all wrong, but that's okay. I don't really care.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show. Broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
1-800 is a fly in the studio. I like to kill it. I can't get to it. Don't you hate flies when they get? And I'm the kind of guy that lets flies out of a window if I can. There's no windows here, no screens. I want to just kill it with a newspaper. In 2 minutes, you're going to hear me running after a fly. I hate flies. I hate them. They remind me of liberals. They always buzz around. They leave fecal matter everywhere. They supply nothing positive to the environment. You know, they're always buzzing. A bee I don't even mind as much as a fly. A bee I never get, it doesn't bother me because I can see a bee. It doesn't weave and bob like a fly. A fly has a certain agility that a bee doesn't. Bees leave you alone by and large. A fly looks to bother you just because it can. My father taught me a trick, may it rest in peace. You take an undershirt off your body. It's an old European trick, and you swing it overhead. You ever see the old men do that years ago? There's no old men around anymore. Where are the old men in this country? You never see them. When I grew up, there were old men around. There were old men, middle-aged men, young men. Today, everyone tries to look alike. With Viagra and hair transplants, it's like one continuum from age 15 till death. Everyone has dark hair, false teeth. And they can be sexually aroused till they go into the coffin. My day, you got old, and that was the end of it. They were old younger, though. The truth is, in my day, 40 was 60. 60 was 40. 80 was 60. I don't know how it happened. So, Like a 60-year-old today is like a 40-year-old then, right? And in those days, they died young at 50, 55, a lot of them. It was like 75, 78. Well, they ate like they didn't know what they were doing. You ever take a look at their diets? Smoked all day, didn't exercise, didn't take a vitamin, no diet. Never heard of a garlic. They drank the wrong alcohol. You know, so, you know, you can kill any good genetic inheritance with that kind of situation. You could see I'm already, you know what I really want to do is have fun. I am having fun. Maybe it's too much fun. Maybe you want me to just do pure, you know, stuff for you. I don't know. I'm not in the mood. I have a friend of hers that I know from 30 years ago, listens to the show avidly in New York. Now, I haven't spoken to him in 20 years, but I heard he listens. And he actually knows that I really, when I told the story of the midget in the seedy hotel in Florida from 25 years ago, there really was a midget. And he really did rob all of my money and his money. And we had to call the police, and the police were in on the take. Remember that story? AC, if you're listening to this show, would you call and confirm that there was a midget in that Fleabag hotel in Miami back in the 60s? It really did exist. I was a naive kid from New York. We took the Greyhound bus down to Florida. We couldn't even afford a $69 air ticket. So it was like intercession, and we took the Greyhound, probably. Greyhound bus to Florida. I remember to this day it went on. It was like a Midnight Cowboy. Right? It was like Midnight Cowboy. I mean, you know, like through Atlanta, there were like chicken bones in the aisle already. People were throwing food on it. You know, like eating chicken and throwing it on the floor. It got so filthy. Who would use a – you know, you really have to be a hero to use a Greyhound toilet. I would never. I'd rather bust inside than – imagine going into a bus toilet in this day and age. Imagine what kind of needles are in there or whatever. I never, even as a kid, I wouldn't use a bus toilet. My God, the thought of it. The driver was like, he was telling you there's a restroom in the back of the bus? Forget about it. It's like apartheid, man. Take that bus. It was the best fried chicken I ever tasted in my life was, you know, what do I know? Everything with me is food. So I came from New York, and my mother would try to make fried chicken. It was okay, but I didn't like the oil. It didn't taste good. So I figured I'm in Atlanta at the bus stop. I'll try in the cafeteria. The Greyhound cafeteria in Atlanta. Now I'm going to try the cuisine of the South in this place. What did I know? I was a kid from New York. I had no idea. I figured, all right, I'm in the South. I'm going to try Southern fried chicken. Where am I going to try it? The Greyhound bus terminal. It was excellent. It was unbelievable. Those days there was no KFC. They do a pretty good job, KFC. I've told you that. I haven't eaten it for a while. I got to try it again. I need like a hand. Maybe that's why I have a skin condition. Not enough grease. You know, I bet you I cut down on the fats too much. My skin became tight. Maybe if I had a high-fat diet. You know what? What if I went to a high-cholesterol diet for a few days? I guarantee. No, I went and got the fish oil today. The Norwegian, the nitrogen-infused $18 variety of cod liver oils from special hippie fish from Norway. Fish that are, they're all socialists. They're not racist. They're not homophobic fish. They danced in certain aquariums. And then they were harvested peacefully in their old age. And their livers were extracted gently by Dr. Death from his jail cell and infused with nitrogen. I actually feel better from it, the fish liver oil. But I don't like it. I grew up on it. Thank God I had fish liver oil as a child. I got to tell you the truth. With the diet I ate, what she put into my mouth, you know how they force feed a goose to make pate? I was close to second in a human form. Well, because they came from poverty in the old world, so they had a little money. The first thing they did was feed you. They didn't intend to give you a heart attack at 12. But it was a cardiotoxic diet. There's no question about it. Ham and eggs for breakfast, meatloaf, a light lunch meatloaf from the night before. And at night, you had a steak or pot roast polished off with an ice cream. Now, if you do that to an average human being today, they're dead in 3 years. Let's say you wanted to take Al-Qaeda members, and you say, well, here's your choice. We're either going to keep you in prison indefinitely with no charges for another 10 years, or we can subject you to Michael Savage's childhood diet for 3 months. And if you don't get a heart attack, you're free. You know what I'm saying? It's a choice. Now, the reason I think I'm still alive is twofold. A, I inherited on the female, the maternal side of the genetics. And B was the cod liver oil. Because despite the cardiotoxic diet, she gave me cod liver oil. She made me take drops. It was like in a dropper bottle in orange juice. I hated it. I hated the taste of it. It was so disgusting. To this day, it was like remembrances of disgusting things past. It was like Proust in the negative. Drip, drip, take it, it's good for you. I hated it. Take it or I'll kill you. And the scissors came out, or the big knife from the drawer. The soprano scissors were looked at. Her eyes crossed, and I knew I better take that orange juice with the, it was less than getting a good wallop, you know, if I didn't take the juice. It was like the Kool-Aid. You look back on these things, it's lucky I didn't wind up in Guyana with Jim Jones. You know, I mean, take my Kool-Aid, man. Here's the drops in the Jell-O, you know. What am I talking about? Do some of you, are you able to follow free association when I get into the jazz thing of the show, or should I stop it? Would you like two dimensions, one dimension, or seven dimensions? You got to tell me what you want me to do here. On the line is a guy I have not spoken to in 10, 15 years, but he knows that the one-eyed midget from Miami story is 100% true. AC, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Michael.
I don't believe it. It's you. It really is you. I cannot believe it. I heard the other day that you are a listener.
A guy called me. He says, you better call your buddy Mike Savage. He says you should call him. Some bartender called me, the very same guy from 6-7 months ago. Mike, the big question is, do you remember how much money you put in the safe in Florida?
No! How much did I... Wait, I'm going to guess. In those days, $35, my entire life savings.
Bingo!
No. Are you serious? Was it 35 bucks?
We put in the money in the morning. We came back 6 o'clock. He didn't know what you were talking about.
Was it not a midget in a shredded midget suit, like a bellhop?
23rd and Collins, man.
23rd and Collins. So is that South Beach today, Arnie?
Well, you know, South Beach, they want to say, is below 21st Street. So it's not officially South Beach, but it's South Miami.
Okay, but did you have bed bugs in your bed?
Of course.
I woke up in the morning, I thought I was hallucinating. There were bed bugs in the hotel. Now, today, I'll bet you that property's worth a pretty penny, no doubt.
But, Mike, you don't remember. You went crazy with the guy. All of a sudden, he immediately found it, or he forgot. He found it.
Wait a minute. Let's slow down. We put the money in, all our money, in the safety deposit box in this Fleabag hotel. We come back. I don't know about no money. I went crazy. Didn't we call for the police?
We threatened to call for the police. The midget eyes started rolling around in his head, the one eye. And all of a sudden, he remembered it was in the back safe.
Oh, I pulled a loud yelling scene in the lobby, right?
Went nuts.
I gave him the command voice and the insanity, and the midget suddenly saw reality. He vaguely remembered the money. Oh, I switched to the other box or something, right? That's right, it reappeared before the police arrived.
He appeared. All of a sudden, he apologized profusely. What can I say? It was incredible. It was
See, but people think I made up the midget in the Miami hotel story. What else? Is it not true, and I won't get too personal, didn't you have an uncle who owned a hotel down there, a rich guy?
Got some memory.
Wait, yes or no? Didn't he own a hotel?
Mickey Hayes.
But didn't he also have a slight habit of stealing the sugar out of other hotels? I remember he owned a hotel worth millions in those days, even in those days millions, which could be, you know, God knows what today. But he had a habit. The sugar and the butter he took from other hotels.
And the plastic spoons.
That's right. You never knew when you might need them because he could be thrown out of Florida any minute. So without getting into detail, I hear you happily remarried and everything now. I won't get into details.
Michael, I have been wanting to call you for the longest time. I just never, I don't know what to say, but now I get phone calls, call you
up.
Oh,
no, now the next time you're on the West Coast, it's dinner on me. We're going to have a good laugh. Because as I get older, I realize, I mean, time, tick-tock. You know, you can't invent old friends, my friend AC.
And you know this, you know, are we on the radio now? Because I don't even know, but...
I hope so. If we're not, I'm out of business.
Let me tell you this. There's one thing, I mean, I go over my Michael's, the times we had together. Why can't I get Hakka cuisine here on the East Coast?
Isn't that amazing? From the years you lived in San Francisco?
You took me on Broadway to the Hakka cuisine. There was all...
Oh, yeah, no, you cannot get Hakka in New York with that Chinese community? You never heard of a Hakka?
All I know is you turned me on to the greatest Chinese food in the world, Hakka.
Well, San Francisco has the best Chinese food in the world. There's no question about it. And Hakka cuisine is at the top of the list. It's in the clay pots and the this and that. You know, before you go, I remember one of the best memories of my life in San Francisco was when you lived here after the, before the horrible, and I can't bring it up, let's forget it with the taxi thing, right?
Michael, there's not enough time that we have now. You're on your show.
But I was there for you, wasn't I? Was I not there for you?
You showed up to see that I was still alive. I had the apartment on 17th Avenue. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. My hands were all in casts.
Oh, I'd like to. That is that where? Let's not go into that person. I'm sure he's a board of supervisor today. Do you remember the dinner your former paramour threw in that wonderful apartment? A long Sicilian dinner she had. Remember, she was from Sicily, right? A lovely girl. And she did an Italian meal. Remember I asked for like a Godfather meal and she did it with like 20 people at a long table. Remember that meal?
Fabulous.
See that? I remember all the good stuff. It's all simple things, AC. Let me tell you.
There's so much. And they asked me what music I wanted to play. And I was all of a sudden, I nutted up. You don't play any Latin music for them on the air, do you? They wouldn't understand.
Oh, yes, I do. Once in a while from the private collection. Our old friend Artie sends me CDs I play. Play Para Vivir while AC is on. Let's see if it makes him go. It means to life, and to you I say to life. God bless you. Thank God you're still with us on this planet.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show. Savage. You're listening to an encore broadcast of the Michael Savage Show.
Arash, you've been waiting. You're up on the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, sir. Hi. Here's the basic point I want to make. Islam itself, the religion, the so-called mainstream religion, is about groups, believers or non-believers. It is not about the dignity of man as an individual. So when you have people by the hundreds of millions, you know, billions, who believe in, who do not believe in the dignity of man or individualism, then naturally they will not recognize individual rights, which is democracy. So if we want to bring democracy there, we have to do a whole lot of banging before that can be set into their thick heads.
I'm not so worried about bringing democracy to them. I'm concerned about them bringing a theocracy to us. Communism didn't believe in individuality either or in individual rights, and Islam and communism has been compared by many intellectuals who have dissected the two isms. Islam is fundamentally a religion that is very much like communism and adherence to the same principle of communism in many, many ways, and people have compared it. And if the leadership doesn't understand that or is too cowardly to say it because they understand they may lose several votes, then we the people are stuck, aren't we?
Yes, we are, sir. You're absolutely right. Now, here's the problem. I'm actually from originally from Afghanistan, sir, but I've grown up in the United States, so I'm an American. My values are all American. That's how I know I'm an American. I do believe in individualism. And as an individual, here's my point. We should specify who the enemy is exactly. Islamism or fundamentalism, they're too vague. They're too academic. If we can identify the enemy as Wahhabism coming out of Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabi Gulf area, Dubai, Qatar, all of these filthy, low-life individuals or, you know, groups or families who are making a lot of money and keeping the rest of the Muslim world ignorant, extremely ignorant, sir. That's the problem. The reason we can't...
You're 100% correct. You're a very educated man. You are a great hope for America. Unfortunately, your voice is falling on dead ears at the White House because the oil lobby is deeply embedded and enmeshed with the Wahhabi Saudi royal family, as you well understand, Arash. That is our problem right there.
So as long as we have Americans who are sellouts, you know, Benedict Arnold's taking, and you know, petrol dollars, I don't see how folks like me, I don't have any money for political activism purposes, because no one that does funding will fund what I'm saying. And I'm trying to...
I hear what you're saying. You mean to get your message out. Well, you're getting your message out now. You just had a phenomenal billboard of ideas go across a certain amount of hundreds of thousands of people who listen on an intermittent basis, you know, adding up to a couple of million people a day and, you know, 10 million or so a week. So your position has also been written about, by the way, by intellectuals who have studied Islam. This is well known that it's Wahhabism. This is not a new idea, Arash. The problem is it's hitting a stone wall when it gets to the upper levels of the Bush-Cheney team, but it's no better on the other side. They're all about the same. Do you really think that the Democrat Party is any different?
No, just as worse. Can I tell you the story of one specific Democrat? His name is Jim Moran of Virginia, Democrat. Let me tell you what happened in my neighborhood, sir. The Wahhabis put up a center, not a mosque now, a center there. The good folks of the neighborhood protested. They said, we don't want this here. They were wise enough to know that it would be turned into a terrorist training center. They said, no, 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 we don't want it here. Congressman Jim Moran forced it upon them. He shoved it down their throats and mine. And because of him, the Wahhabi Center in Annandale, Virginia, is now operating full of anti-American hatred. They recently, because of the outrage of a few Muslims, they've had to force two imams to step down, two Saudi-trained imams, because they were putting out too much anti-American garbage. But so what? They'll just get another and another and another. The point is, why can't we close it down?
Well, there are two answers to the question. One is it may have been a pointedly wise thing to leave it open, sort of as a honey trap for flies. You know, maybe the FBI wanted it open to attract the would-be suicide bombers. You know what I'm saying, Arash?
Yes, but in my neighborhood, sir?
So you're saying you're a mainstream, moderate practitioner of the religion of Islam, correct?
No, sir. I don't practice. I don't believe in religion.
Okay, you just don't want it in your neighborhood because you say it's too extreme and it teaches hatred and murder.
Not only that, but it's dangerous. What if these nutcases hurt me accidentally on their way to hurting someone who's whiter, you know?
You mean if they're wiring up some kind of device and it goes off?
Right, or devices, many, you know, and forget devices. These people are dangerous with their bare hands, believe it or not.
You're listening to an encore broadcast of The Michael Savage Show.